Know someone who's really, really good at something, but just can't see it. No matter how much they're told, no matter how many awards they win for their, no matter how many accolades they received, as far as they're concerned, they're just ordinary. Maybe somewhat less than ordinary. Maybe in a worst case scenario, they consider themselves useless. I wonder if you know someone like that. I wonder if in this time of pandemic, this time during lockdown, when it's hard to keep contact with people, I wonder if you feel that God has forgotten you, that life is so tough, that at the moment you cannot see possibly where the Lord is at work and how God is in the midst of it all. Has God forsaken you in favor of somebody else? I wonder. Do you know, I wonder whether these questions could be asked of some churches. I wonder whether there's a congregation that might be particularly good at something and yet can't see it. Some of you will know that I have a passion for reading church minute books, and I love going back through the history. I like tying it up with other records. And I remember not so much the record books, because they were sketchy. They'd been lost during the war. But picking up other bits of records, reading about a church in Bristol that were, we were members there, and they were always down on themselves. They never had enough money. They were always struggling. And yet you read there what records there were. You piece together the information and you see that they were brilliant working with children and young people. They were always ahead of the curve. What they were doing now, other churches will be doing in 10 years' time. They just couldn't see it. And yet they were superb at some things. But their mind was always on the negative. I wonder if a church can believe that they've been forgotten by God. I wonder if things happen and people leave, people pass on, if there seems to be constant problems. I wonder whether we start describing ourselves as God forsaken. Has God forgotten us? I wonder if a church struggling to share the gospel and make it relevant in our today's society, I wonder whether we can feel forgotten and abandoned by God. There's a sense of what's happening here in the opening, in these verses from Isaiah 49. God is promising amazing things. He's saying he's going to rebuild and restore his people. He has a plan for them. And yet all these people can do is complain. Now, to be fair, it's not an easy time for God's people. To put this passage in its historical context and its scriptural context, is in the second part of Isaiah, what some people call Deuto-Isaiah. It's a post-exile piece. It's after the exile, after they come back into their land. But it's, you know, it's after that first flush of we've been set free. It's when life is starting to settle down and life is starting to get just tricky again, you know, almost boring, almost hard work. And after the initial flurry of excitement is over, this in their repopulated land, well, there's been an attempt to rebuild the temple that's sort of petered out. And the enemies of the people, the enemies that are described in Ezra and Nehemiah, they're still there, still worrying at them. And so while the exile's over, things aren't really very much better. And so while God says, I might rebuild you as a people, they just want to say, our God's forgotten us. Where is our God in the midst of this? This passage in Isaiah 49 also forms part of the suffering servant songs, a series of passages and promises that are often seen to be linked to the coming of Jesus, the coming of a savior. This passage in Isaiah is a good news story. If you look at verses 8 to 16, you can see good news after again and again and again. In verse 8, the servant, the one who comes, will provide a new covenant, a new agreement, a new contract, a new way of being signed by the Lord with his people. In verse 9, there's an announcement that a freedom, released from the darkness and a pasture for the flocks. Verse 10, do you know there are connotations in verse 10 with Psalm 23, the one who leads by still waters. It also speaks of the compassion and the guidance of the Lord. In verses 11 and 12, we find illustrations of mountains being flattened, a highway being constructed, preparing the way for the Lord. And in verse 13, we speak of comforting and celebration. This is good news, and lots of it. It's a story of a God who's not given up on his people, has not forgotten them by, in fact, anything but that. And yet the people say, no, our God has forgotten us. Read this passage with New Testament spectacles on, and you start to see God at work in a different way. You start to see the prophecy of him speaking of his coming in Jesus. They speak to us in the here and now, in the midst of pandemic, at the beginning of a second lockdown, with all the economic and health issues that that brings with it. Here, if you read with New Testament spectacles, you see the servant of the Lord. In verse 8, you see Jesus, the person who creates the new covenant, a new relationship between us and our God. In verse 9, and while it's more clearer in later passages like Isaiah 61 and Isaiah 58, you see what Jesus quotes in the Nazareth Manifesto. When he stands up in the synagogue and says, I've come to set captives free, to pronounce the year of the Lord's favor, to bring light into the darkness. In verse 10, time and time again, the gospel writers speak of Jesus having compassion upon us. And you see here, and there's maybe echoes here, of this in John 7, when Jesus offers living water to the Samaritan woman. Verse 11, there are similarities between the coming of John the Baptist to prepare the way of the Lord and what Isaiah prophesies in verse 11. There is good news, and not just good news for Jesus' time, good news for our time, a hope of a restoration, a hope of a regeneration, hope for now, hope in a time of pandemic, in a time of struggle, in a time of desperation, in a time of frustration, hope in a God who has not forgotten us. This is hope for a church in the wilderness, a hope for God, who God's people, a nation struggling to find good news. It's hope for a church that is faithful and wonders what the Lord is doing. You know, some scholars have written on the church in Western Europe today and also in America, and described it as a church that is a people in exile, a people living in a land amongst strangers who do not know what we're talking about, who cannot understand why we worship Jesus, can't get their heads around why we give up our time and our money to give to the church and to serve others, cannot get their head around what Sunday worship is about. And whereas we might have considered the United Kingdom to have Christian heritage, whereas once Christian values permeated our society, in many ways that's no longer the case. And we who call ourselves the followers of Jesus are now out of step with the rest of society, but that doesn't mean that God is not at work. It does not mean that he's not doing amazing things. It does not mean that he has forgotten us. Look at what the Lord is saying to a people in a similar place, a place of stagnation, a place of desolation. He speaks of a new covenant. He speaks of freedom. He speaks of being taken out of darkness. He speaks of a return to him. These are words of hope. These are words of the equivalent of a cup of water to a thirsty person. They're promises to hold on and to believe in. And yet in Isaiah 49, verse 14, the people will have none of it. They say, nope, it doesn't matter what you say. The Lord has forsaken me. He has forgotten me. I wonder if that's true of us. I wonder if there's so much potential that we cannot see, cannot accept. I wonder whether as a church you are so focused on the difficulties that you cannot see your potential and you would rather believe that God has forgotten you. I wonder what the chances are of God actually forgetting us. I wonder what the chances are of God forgetting Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and those who would follow after. I wonder what the chances are of the God of our ancestors, those who had put their hope in him and had built buildings like this, had sought to reach out with the gospel and persuade others to follow Jesus. I wonder what the chances of God forgetting them actually are. Take a look at the scriptures. The God who the people claim has forgotten them is the God who remembered Noah, tossed about in a flood in Genesis 8:1. He's the same God who remembers Abraham in Genesis 19 and rescues him and his cousin Lot fleeing from Sodom and Gomorrah. He's the same God who remembers Rachel in Genesis 30:22. He is the same God who remembers Hannah in 1 Samuel 1. Here in Isaiah 49, the Lord possesses that even if a mother forgets her own child, something that's considered to be incredibly unlikely, even if that is the case, the Lord still will not forget his people. With all this in mind, what are the chances that God has forgotten us? I would suggest to you they're pretty slim, non-existent even. But even more than that, on this day of remembrance, this day of mourning, this day, when we make it our business, our tradition to remember the casualties of war, on this day when we come to a very small table today, but this table spread with the elements of a cup and bread that speak of Jesus and his death and his resurrection. But more than that, we remember what Jesus has done and done for us. On this day when we come to the Lord's table, things might be difficult at the moment. But here we pause and remember that on the night he was betrayed by one of his friends, Jesus broke bread. He shed the cup. He signed a new covenant in his blood. Verse 16 of Isaiah 49, see, I have engraved you on the palm of my hand. Can't help but come read that verse in Isaiah 49 and then come to this table with its bread and its cup and see the hands and feet of Jesus on the cross, the blood flowing, and read, see, I have engraved you on the palms of my hand. Your walls are always before me. Now, in the context of the Old Testament, there's something of a master-servant relationship going on here. Only it's been reversed. You see, in an Old Testament context, the master would brand on the hand of the servant his name, so he was owned. But now it is God who has branded our names on the hands of Jesus. This table with its bread and its cup reminds us that God remembers us. Back in the 1980s, there was Graham Kendrick wrote a song called Come See the Beauty of the Lord. Come see the beauty of his face. See the lamb that once was slain. See on his palms, he's carved your name. See how our pain has pierced his heart. On his brow, he bears our pride, a crown of thorns. If there's a reason to believe that God has remembered us, it is here in this bread and this cup. It is to remember they can't possibly forget us. Here today, on the day of remembrance, we remember that God has remembered us. See, I have carved your name on the palm of my hands. But I wonder if that's changed anything. I wonder if in a time of pandemic, in a time of frustration, in a time of sadness, in a time of isolation, I wonder whether remembering that God can never forget us might deepen our faith, might deepen our trust. I wonder if remembering that God will remember us might help us just to trust that little bit more. I wonder if remembering that God is still at work in us and working through us still, even if we cannot see it, I wonder if that helps us, sustains us. I wonder if we could remember that God has not forgotten us. Remember that he's carved our names on the palm of his hand. Remember that he has good things planned for us. I wonder if that changes things for us. And if it does, I wonder how. I'd be interested to know. Amen.